Welcome to The Forum on 90.5 WCBE. Every week we bring you the conversations shaping Columbus, straight from the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday networking luncheons. CMC forums are where leaders, thinkers, and community voices come together to tackle the issues that matter most. Want to be part of the conversation? Tickets and details about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. This week, we're talking about something that hits home for families and employers alike, kids' mental health. When children struggle, parents and caregivers feel the stress, and that can spill over into the workplace. So how do Central Ohio employers, healthcare leaders, and advocates help break that cycle? Our guests this week are Anna Ankenbauer, Senior Director of Learning and Development at Abercrombie & Fitch, Community Mental Health Advocate Nina Day, and Dr. Ariana Hoett, Executive Director of the Kids Mental Health Foundation. Our host this week is Sierra Johnson, anchor and reporter with NBC4. Let's dive into this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, Why Children's Mental Health is a Workforce Issue.
Thank you so much for having me again. As she mentioned, I'm Sierra Johnson. I'm an anchor and reporter at NBC4. And since I've returned to Columbus about 3 years ago, I actually added health to the title. So health reporter with NBC4. And that's given me the opportunity to really delve into a lot of the situations, a lot of the issues that folks here in Central Ohio are facing. And I've noticed mental health is something that continues to come up. At least once a week, I'm getting an email, you should tackle XYZ as related to mental health. And that's given me a chance to interact a lot with some of the folks here on the stage and Nationwide Children's. We have several great health systems here in Central Ohio. So it's really been awesome to kind of navigate those spaces with you all. So let's kind of just dive right into things. Kind of set the tone. Give us a picture, Dr. Hoett, if you can, about the prevalence of mental health in children. Kind of a broad question, but what does it look like in your world? What are you seeing?
Yeah, we know that children's mental health has been declared a public health crisis. And that was following data that the CDC collected that was actually pre-pandemic. It was 2009 to 2019 that indicated increases in depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts and behaviors. And so it led various bodies to say, hey, there is a crisis happening. And then the pandemic occurred and it exacerbated everything. We do know that the last couple of years, numbers have started to look better, but they were so high that even those decreases, there's still a crisis. And we need more data, more years of data to be able to say, hey, there's a downward trend. We don't know yet. So for now, we know that, yes, kids are facing a crisis and that their parents are very, very worried about it.
With that in mind, Nina, you're a parent, but you're also involved in one of the most forward-facing entities here in Central Ohio. I guess talk to us about the collaboration that you have with Nationwide Children's kind of dealing with mental health.
Yeah, about 8 years ago when Ryan became the head coach, we sat down and talked about, you know, our passion and what we wanted to get behind. And we wanted to get behind mental health and especially children's mental health. So we partnered with Nationwide about 8 years ago and started creating, you know, curriculum for K through 12 to start conversations in schools with parents, teachers, coaches, and try to help break the stigma. Ryan and I are just passionate about getting the conversation going and allowing children to be able to talk to parents, coaches, and guidance counselors. Because when Ryan and I grew up, his dad had passed. We were young from suicide, and I have always suffered from anxiety, and we suffered in silence, and we just want to make sure that the next generation, our children, as well as all children, have the ability to talk to somebody when they need it.
Thank you for sharing that. And then Anna, kind of roping us in, we're connecting the two worlds of pediatric mental health and the parents that are helping navigate those spaces. Talk about why, in your opinion, this is a workforce issue.
We believe at Abercrombie that this is a workforce issue because our associates and our customers are telling us that it is. Many of our associates are caregivers or parents. We spend a lot of time listening to our team globally, both in Central Ohio and all around the world, and they have told us that we have a role to play. We have a role to give them access to different resources. We have a role to invest in our community, and we really can make a difference by partnering with charities like Nationwide or taking a really hard look at things like our benefits program programs to ensure that we are putting mental health at sort of the forefront of many of our decisions that impact our community.
So for anyone, I know something that came up on the call was the topic of transparency and disclosure as it relates to your child's mental health. Why is this important? Why is transparency, why is disclosure important as the parent of someone navigating a mental health crisis in all of your kind of realms?
Do you want me to start? I am not a parent, I will admit that, but I do and have worked at Abercrombie for 13 years and have seen our workforce evolve quite a bit as we've gone through a pretty significant growth transformation. And so we have seen our workforce evolve from young professionals to many parents. And we subscribe to the mentality as leaders and as managers that we can only support you if you, you know, share with us what is going on in your life. And so we try to enable and support and empower our team to tell us where they are so we can meet them where they are and provide additional resources or support that can certainly help them. We at Abercrombie sell clothing and jeans. You know, we are not the experts on mental health, which is why we rely on a large network of experts in this space, which for us include the Kids Mental Health Foundation, Headspace, many of our benefits providers or otherwise, to really connect people or their children or the people they may be giving care to with the resources that they need. And so that's only possible when we know what is going on in someone's life.
We did a study at the Kids Mental Health Foundation in 2021 and 2022 where we talked to parents and caregivers, and I define caregivers in this case in our study as caregiving children. And they told us that about half of parents were feeling stressed and worried about their children's mental health. And about one third of the workforce was leaving their place of employment because of their children's mental health. But what jumped out was that most of them were not telling. We asked them, do you talk to HR? Do you talk to your boss or supervisor? Do you talk to your colleagues? And they weren't. And so, and we saw that even more so for employees of diverse backgrounds. And so what we knew is people were leaving their workplaces, we were losing diversity in workplaces, and we didn't know that it was because of children's mental health. And so what Anna's saying is really important is we have to set the tone, we have to normalize talking about kids' mental health, and we have to remember that if a child isn't well at home, the parent's not going to be able to do their job. And so we have to talk about it in the workplace too.
From my perspective, just being in the community and having a middle schooler and two high schoolers, I think the biggest thing I hear from parents is, first of all, access, and the shame that they feel when they realize that their son or daughter has anxiety or depression. And so what I'm trying to help is to let these parents know that there is no shame in it. And I hope one day, you know, we all, you know, walk around and say, you know, my son or daughter broke their leg or they have a cold or have the flu. And I want to get to the point where parents are okay with saying, you know, my daughter is having some anxiety about this or she's not in a good place mentally, and normalize that conversation. Because I think one of the biggest things with parents is they feel alone and that their child is suffering from something that is just related to their child. But I think we all know that every family deals with mental illness.
You mentioned stigma. I know for so many, that's a barrier in itself. But in your realms, have you seen other barriers? Is it insurance for, or is it just accessibility? I mean, are you finding that there are any barriers for parents to kind of make that connection?
Yeah, nationally, on average, it takes 10 to 11 years from the moment a symptom starts to the moment a child gets care. It's a decade of a parent trying to navigate their child's needs. And it's a lot of reasons. So we know, yes, stigma is, of course, one of those. Fear of being judged or like your parenting is, you did something wrong. There is also a lack of health literacy when it comes to mental health. So just parents not knowing, when should I worry? Is this normal? Is that just my child is a teen now and they're changing their behavior. And so there's a lot of just wait and see, let's see if it gets better. And we know, like with physical health, when it comes to mental health, the sooner we treat something, the better the outcome. So we don't want you to wait. We want action early. And then you add all the systemic barriers, whether it's insurance, finance, simply not knowing how do I find a therapist? Where do I start? That's the question I get the most from friends and family is, okay, I want to do therapy, but where do I begin? And so it is a lot of why we do what we do at the Kids Mental Health Foundation is we want to educate the community of when do you worry and then what do you do if you are worried?
Well, I think in terms of, you know, my children, I feel like at this point, they know how to physically take care of themselves, get enough sleep, eat proper nutrition, hydrate, all of that. What we're focusing on, especially with my husband's job and the pressure that we face, is to take care of themselves mentally and emotionally way ahead of the game next week. So what does that look like? It's you know, taking, you know, staying off social media, doing things to help your emotions and your mental health way before an issue arises. And that's kind of what I've been trying to, you know, talk to my kids about, other children about, other parents about, is talking to your kids about not only their physical health, but, you know, taking care of their mental health as well and exercising, you know, resilience and things like that.
And then, Anna, before you jump in, just kind of a thought off of that. In your opinion, as someone in the workplace, how do you create the supportive and the inclusive cultures as it's related to mental health, I mean, as an HR professional?
Yeah, it's a great question. We have evolved our culture quite a bit over the last decade, and we have put purpose at the center. And one of our core pillars of our culture is really creating a culture of belonging at ANFCO. And that belonging means something different to everyone. And we really subscribe to that mentality. And so for us, it started with a ton of listening, understanding what may be barriers or why people may feel certain ways, and really getting crisp and clear on the role that we can play to support associates as they navigate, you know, a variety of life circumstances. And so as we thought about the role we have to play in the mental health space, or how we can help associates ensure that they remain well, or help associates who may be caregivers of children, teens, or young adults, we really have focused on two specific things, increasing education or health literacy, as you said, Dr. Hoyt, and thinking through our associates' learning journey, whether that is related to their understanding of mental health, how to maybe navigate that. And that's not something that we as a company are teaching. We are leaning on experts in the field, whether those are our charitable partners like the Kids Mental Health Foundation. We partner very closely with the Jed Foundation to provide curriculum, or an organization like the Trevor Project. So increasing education and literacy, I would say, is like one major thing that we are doing for associates, not only for themselves, but also for the families or their dependencies. We're also really, really focused on building communities. And I would say that has been a major differentiating factor as we've really evolved our culture and created this culture of belonging. We do that in a variety of ways. We subscribe to associate resource groups, which are communities for different communities. We have a families and caregivers associate resource group where they are really relying on each other to have very similar conversations, help each other navigate you know, various things that are happening. And then the third thing I would say that we really do is continue to invest in causes that are truly the experts in this space, because we really believe that those organizations are what is going to make a difference and actually break the stigma in future generations, which is why our commitment to a Nationwide or a Trevor Project is truly so important. And we just remain authentically committed to those organizations and deeply embedding their work into all things that we do at Abercrombie, whether that's a customer shopping experience and selling products that may represent various missions of those organizations, or all the way through leveraging a partner to teach an education course, or even training associates to be crisis callers to support an organization. So there are many different ways in which we do it, but we really try to authentically embed it into our culture and create different access points along the way, And then on the benefits side, while I don't lead our benefits program, I'm an, you know, an HR leader across our global organization. And for us, it's really just about very clearly communicating all of the different benefit programs that we have, ensuring that if an associate is looking for a counselor, they can do that very quickly. We're providing aid. And then we also empower and educate our managers and our people leaders to be able to speak to that. We find often in HR that people aren't coming to an HR representative. They're actually talking to a manager, and that person is probably less equipped than even an HR professional to have some of those conversations. So how do we just ensure that managers across the organization, whether they're here in Columbus or in Shanghai or London or, you know, wherever they may be, can very quickly get that person the help that they need or get them in touch with the right resource? So that's how we're thinking about it at Abercrombie.
And then kind of in that same breath, I just keep hearing partnership, collaboration, partnership, collaboration. Dr. Howitt, can you speak to how important and beneficial it is to have folks at OSU football or a family member or an Abercrombie kind of weaving in, making sure everyone is touched?
I think it's the most important part of what we do. Two big things. One is awareness. We could create all the beautiful resources and helpful resources, but if people don't know they're there and don't use them, that we're not helping anyone. And so having partners like the Day family, Abercrombie, that we're kind of helping meet families where they are, meet parents where they are, and letting them know, hey, this resource exists. Nothing drives traffic to our website like when Coach Day talks about us. I mean, truly, we see an increase in visits, an increase in donations, because it is authentic. It is his the story and being able to bring awareness that, hey, this resource exists. But then also a big part of what we do is access. We want everyone to be able to have the education to help raise healthy children. And we can only be accessible if we're free. And so being able to have partners that believe in us, as Anna is saying, and support us and help us keep going and helping us reach those classrooms. I mean, all the middle school teachers that get our daytime break kits, they don't pay for those. Those are all free, and it's because of support of our partners. So it's not only the awareness, but it's the accessibility, and that's what's going to shift our communities and our culture to be able to raise those mentally healthy children.
Did you have any thoughts about partnerships, Nina?
No, it's an honor to partner with Nationwide Children's Hospital. They do an unbelievable job. And what they do, they're leaders in the country in what they do. And Ryan and I we always say it's one of the best things about living in Columbus is our partnership with them.
Switching gears a little bit, this is something that also kind of came up in our thought process conversation. You mentioned seeking resources. AI is the talk of everything. ChatGPT this, ChatGPT that. And for some, if you're in a pinch, it becomes your go-to resource. Coupling that with mental health as a parent, you're looking for ways to either not diagnose a child, but kind of piece out what's going on, or then start the conversation. Starting with Dr. Howitt, and then everyone's just kind of thoughts on AI and mental health. And I mean, what do we do? What? I don't even know what the question is, really. Does AI mental health?
Well, you know, one thing I was thinking when Anna was sharing about the benefits is when we did our study of working parents and caregivers, one thing we found is when your child is in crisis, you are feeling high emotion as a parent, and so you're not thinking straight. You may have gotten that benefit email in December and January letting you know, hey, you can have 15 free therapy sessions for your child. You're not going to remember that in that moment. How do I find it? What's the interweb? Who do I reach out to? What number do I call? And so I think when parents are under that high emotion, high stress that we know they are, they're going to look for tools. They're going to look for shortcuts. And so I love to hear how you're training everyone in the workplace of, you know, a parent in crisis may not go to HR because they're not thinking rationally. They're going to go to their colleague. And so being able to make sure that everyone knows that, you know, at our hospital, we have You Matter or our Lyra Health, I think they're called. And so being able to tell a colleague, hey, did you know that you can have those free sessions? But when it comes to AI, that's what's happening is we're overwhelmed and AI is helpful and it can be a helpful tool to many parents. We just heard from a partner that was talking about how parents are using it to create routines, visual routines for their kids to help with behavior management, or coloring pages that include social stories for those kids that maybe are anxious. So there are ways to use AI that can be helpful. The problem is when we're using it as therapeutic advice. And again, back to the literacy idea, if I don't know how to vet where this advice is coming from, then how do I know it's trusted? It's okay to use it to get resources, but then I want people to check, where did this come from? Did it come from a hospital, a university, a trusted resource, or am I getting it from a random website? And so I think that that's where I worry. And of course, children having access to it who can't fully process, they're finding connections with these AI machines versus connection with their real colleague or real peers. And so there's so much. I mean, we could do a whole hour on AI, but when it comes to the working parents, I think that's my biggest thing, is reminding everyone to check the resource. Where is this coming from? Is it trusted?
At ANF, we are most focused in our learning journey, and I oversee our learning department, in helping associates understand how to leverage AI. To go back to what you're saying, our chief technology officer will say we need to ensure that associates understand AI safety, and that's a word he uses often, because there is just so much at your fingertips that has risk associated with it. So as we think about how to support just our general associate in leveraging this tool, it truly is about efficiency and safety and doing it in a really smart and measured way, and understanding where it is beneficial and where it could be harmful. We certainly have many, many professionals in the AI space that are leveraging it for customer personalization and things like that, but we are really focused on ensuring that our general population really can use it in a safe and smart way to get the right resources at the right times.
I would be remiss if we did not acknowledge where we were. We're at a veterans museum. So with that being said, veterans, their children's have a unique situation. I know you all recently had a study about some of the stressors that families or children experience. Would you like to share that? And would others maybe like to chime in about, if you're in the reserves or if you still are a working and a serving parent, kind of what that looks like, or ways you can be a supportive community member to those families?
Absolutely. I mean, talk about a different kind of workplace, right? We know that our military families are often under the typical pressures that any working parent is under, and then plus more. And that's what we have Dr. Whitney Ragland Bignall here, and my colleague Diane McGuire, who led our needs assessment with the military connected children. And that's what they found, is that these families are often under added stressors, whether it's constant moving or separation because of deployment, or simply because the kids are in your typical public school that is not military connected, and the teachers may not understand what that life is like, what their day-to-day life. And so it is our hope is to support those parents, those military connected children, by helping the whole community be involved, by helping the kids feel like they belong and like I'm understood and I have the support, and giving the parents the tools so that they don't feel overwhelmed and stressed when something's going on with their child's mental health.
Switching gears, I guess, what would your recommendation be? We've had a lot of conversation. We've talked about resources and partnership. I mean, what would your recommendation be for parents, for workplace, and for just other community members?
I can start. I would say, as a representative of a Columbus workforce, I think for us, what has been a massive unlock are really two things. Putting purpose at the center of all of our decisions, and understanding that that can be a North Star for us. Our purpose at Abercrombie & Fitch is that we are here for you on your journey to help you be and become, you know, who you're meant to be. And that can show up in a lot of different ways. Where we are really focused right now is supporting the mental health of future generations, so kids, teens, and young adults. And that purpose has really helped us get crisp and clear on the partnerships that we aim to keep, and has allowed us to increase our investment and lean into experts and really, you know, leverage partnerships like the Kids Mental Health Foundation to connect our associates with very purposeful purposeful causes that connect to exactly the issues that they need support on. The other is just really listening to our stakeholders. And for us, that's our global associate base and also our customers. And we have heard loud and clear that we have a role to play for each of those groups in the mental health space. And so we have spent a lot of time cross-functionally as an HR department, understanding the things that we can do and where we can really lean on experts, but where we've been able to be authentic and foster a really positive culture of belonging. That is where we've seen, I think, largest outcomes and otherwise. So I would say listen to your people, whoever that may be, and leverage purpose as a North Star to really guide you forward and rely on the experts.
I would just say starting conversations always help to break the stigma. I think the more people that are having conversations about mental health, bringing awareness to what is going on with our youth is very, very important. Ryan, you know, talks to his team almost daily about their mental health, and a lot of them suffer from a lot of different things. And I think people in our community across the board need to start normalizing, you know, when you're not okay. It's okay to be not okay. And the more conversations that are had, the more stigmas that are broken. And I just think the next generation will be much more, you know, well-equipped to deal with life than I think my generation.
Yeah, I think there's nothing more powerful than those that are in leadership positions setting the example, right? And I think that's what you all model, is normalizing the conversation. We did a brief literature review this spring, just looking again at the data in workplace mental health and children. And I just want to share some numbers because these two specifically jumped out. So parents report spending about 10 hours a week managing their child's mental health. And 44% of caregivers say they've exceeded their PTO trying to support their kids. And so it is a significant workplace problem. We have to be able to set the example, create the benefits, and just give flexibility. That's what we heard in our study, is parents need flexibility. Taking a few hours off of work to go take my child to therapy shouldn't impact my performance, but many do feel that way. And a reminder that mental health can be chronic. And so it's not just my child is sick this week and I'm out for the week. It's I have to take them to therapy every week. And so parents coping with this at home really need workplace flexibility.
And then if you're just a colleague and you know someone is going through something and your experience is, what is a good way to be supportive for those parents?
I would say, as a manager and a leader of a variety of people, I have really tried to enable and support flexibility and take what they're saying at face value and create a safe space where they can share whatever they feel comfortable sharing with me, but also allow them the opportunity to step away from work as much as they need. We are very lucky that we work for a very flexible company that allows that to exist and happen. But I will say just creating a safe space and allowing or enabling that flexibility has been probably the best thing I can offer.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Children's mental health isn't just a family issue. It's a workplace issue. When kids struggle, parents and caregivers face missed work and mounting stress, creating ripple effects across their lives. This week, we are exploring the link between children's mental health and workplace performance, and the roles that Central Ohio employers, healthcare leaders, and advocates are playing in breaking the cycle of stress for families. This week, we welcome Anna Enkenbauer, Senior Director of Learning and Development with Abercrombie & Fitch, Community Mental Health Advocate Nina Day, and Dr. Ariana Hoett, Executive Director of the Kids Mental Health Foundation. Our host is Sierra Johnson, anchor and reporter with NBC4. We'll return to this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, Why Children's Mental Health is a Workforce Issue, after a short break.
It is said every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hey there, music lovers. Tano Jones here of the Tano Jones Revelry. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley. Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, or perhaps what music means to them, and so much more. Music Journeys airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, Tano Jones, look for Music Journeys in WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.org. You guys be well. Peace.
WCBE brings you over 100 performances every year live from Studio A. For more information and to see upcoming Studio A performances, check out our website at WCBE.org. Live from Studio A is supported by the Greater Columbus Arts Council and 90.5 WCBE, where live music matters.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Children's mental health isn't just a family issue, it's a workplace issue. When kids struggle, parents and caregivers face missed work and mounting stress, creating ripple effects across their lives. This week, we're exploring the link between children's mental health and workplace performance, and the roles that Central Ohio employers, healthcare leaders, and advocates are playing in breaking the cycle of stress for families. This week's panelists are Anna Ankenbauer, Senior Director of Learning and Development with Abercrombie & Fitch, Community Mental Health Advocate Nina Day, and Dr. Ariana Hoett, Executive Director of the Kids Mental Health Foundation. Our host is Sierra Johnson, anchor and reporter with NBC4. Let's get back to this week's CMC Forum, Why Children's Mental Health is a Workforce Issue.
I think that talking to people in the community and different parents, I think allowing them to communicate and then guiding them on what to do, because I know a lot of parents have no idea what to do when their children come to them and say that they're depressed or have anxiety or something's, you know, wrong. And giving the assurance to those parents that, it's okay to prioritize your child's mental health like you would their physical health and take time off from work and or miss a vacation or set boundaries. You know, if that's with coaches, teachers, friends, I think a lot of people need to understand that all of these things will end up helping their children in the long run.
You know, you mentioned loneliness earlier, and I think to answer your question, how do we support a colleague? I think many parents can feel very lonely, like you said. And so just being there for your colleague and asking them, what do you need? Yes, offering that flexibility, helping cover where possible, but just being there as a person, offering support so that they don't feel alone.
And I did want to make a note, there will be a microphone in the back. We're going to take questions from the audience. And if you're watching the live stream, we will be taking questions from them as well. So if you are watching the live stream or YouTube, you can type the questions in the chat. So while those questions are coming in, I guess just one last question. So many folks here have been listening and they've been hearing and they're like, maybe I feel like my workplace can do better. We're smaller, but we don't have a budget for, you know, maybe just bringing in a lot of health experts. But what is something they can recommend to an employer to make it a more mental health friendly or a more supportive work environment?
Point where I'm going to plug a resource from the Kids Mental Health Foundation. So we have a program called Bloom, and it is a digital resource that can be provided by the employer to their employee. It is free of cost, and it is anonymous to the employee. They can sign in, they can learn how to just help their child flourish, so wellness habits that they can build in their kids, or they can learn, what if I'm managing my child's mental health and my job, how do I balance, how do I support my child? And then there's, what if my child is in crisis? And so definitely, if you're interested, come talk to our team today. I would love for every workplace to have Bloom when we talk to our working parents and ask them if your place of employment could provide a resource for you about your physical health, your mental health, or your child's mental health, what would you want? And we heard child's mental health was the top need at that time.
I would say something that has been really free for us is creating associate resource groups or building community where you find individuals who are experiencing similar things and having them connect across the group. We've seen partnerships and friendships and groups be formed across our families and parents ARG, and that has been something that has been a really tangible impact on our associate journey and has honestly been a free form of connectivity and creating some really positive moments for our team.
We'll throw it over to Doug. I think he has some of the live stream questions.
Sierra, thank you so much. Thank you so much to today's panelists for a terrific and important conversation. As a parent myself, this is great information for me. And I wish that my generation had thought differently about access to mental health resources. It seems like we're moving at least in the right direction. So thank you all. If you have a question for today's panelists, please do join us here. Join me here at the microphone. If you're watching online with the live stream, please type your questions into the chat. We'll try to get to as many of those questions as we can today. I know there were some issues with the live stream a little earlier. So those of you who have, are still on with us, thank you so much. And please do get those questions to us. Great questions at CMC always have two things in common. They can be asked in just a few sentences. And what punctuation mark does a question end with? They end with a question mark. Yes, they do. Always good to keep in mind. I'm going to launch us off with this one. How do we help kids with the negative impact of social media without having them disconnect altogether?
Maybe I should take that one. Obviously, we've had some peaks and valleys in my husband's career, and when things don't go well in Columbus, it's pretty heavy. And I have three children in the middle school and high school, and it can get very, very difficult. The one thing that I do is, you know, post any loss, we shut down our social media. And that's just completely stepping away from it, because the negativity and how toxic it can become has really affected my children's mental health in the past. So just stepping away until people can actually calm down about a situation is probably the number one thing that I do in our household. And the other thing is to remind people that, you know, my husband, these players, they're humans. I think with social media, too many people go behind a keyboard and just say whatever they want, things that they would never say in person. And humanizing these players and these coaches helps, because far too often people don't view them as humans, but as objects that they can just tweet at, you know, DM and things like that. So those are the two things that we focus on.
I want to really emphasize two things you said. One is you are parent-led boundaries, right? You are choosing for your children. This is a time when we're turning social media off. If you are a parent and you're giving access to your child social media, you have to stay involved. And there are times when you're going to have to step in and say, we're turning this off, right? Another thing is you said we. It sounds like the whole family does it. We have to set the example as adults. So we've talked a lot about literacy today. We have to teach kids how to use social media safely. It is here. Once you have the decision that, okay, I'm going to give this to my child, it is important that they know how to use it safely. It is important that you model it. It is important that you set boundaries as a parent. It is not just a one-time conversation. It is every single day to make sure that they're staying safe.
Hi, everyone. Thank you all for being here. And Nina, thank you so much for being a champion and sharing your story. It means a lot. We talk a lot about what children's mental health means in terms of age range. I think we talk about social media, starting conversations. We think about older kids. But when we're companies or employers or people want to champion, when should we be thinking about children's mental wellness? When does that start? When should a parent be thinking about mental health literacy with their children? How young? And what has the greatest influence in terms of when we start thinking about kids' mental health, when should that start?
From day one. Early childhood is so, so important. Those first 5 years of a kid's life. I always say the way that we teach kids their numbers and their letters and their colors, you know that you should be talking to a newborn the moment they're born, right? we should also be doing mental health. And so what that looks like is giving them emotion words. When you're reading a book, talking like, oh, this character looks really happy, this one looks really mad. And starting as they develop, then you talk about how that emotion feels in the body. And then you talk about how do you regulate that emotion. But the conversation should start from the beginning. And to your question of, for our partners, what is that age that could have a lot of impact? We focus at the Kids Mental Health Foundation for kids under 14, but really those kids under 5, that's when we could really make a life change trajectory to them.
Thank you. Question from the live stream audience. What advice would you share with parents navigating life with a neurodivergent child?
I think the same advice we've shared today is rely on the experts, you know, finding the mental health professionals that can support you and give you the tools. It doesn't mean that, depending on what's going on, it doesn't mean that your child may need a therapist or a mental health professional their whole life, but you may benefit from brief treatment just to learn some tools as a parent, as a child, to relying on the community, meeting other parents with children that may have the same diagnosis as your child. And then again, going to those websites that are created by professionals. And there are organizations that do have, like NAMI, for example, does create local communities that you could go and meet other parents. But I think it's about not doing it by yourself, looking for support, finding that community for yourself, whether with your friends, your family, or those going through something like you.
Hi, my name is Hannah. I do a lot of mental health advocacy, and I've worked in HR for over 15 years, and am also a veteran, so I appreciate you guys kind of touching all of those points. My question revolves around trauma therapy and how you can help children and parents who are dealing with situations where it may not be a typical mental health situation, as kids also deal with, you know, domestic violence, and especially children who are children of military parents, they deal with a lot of trauma. Do you guys have any programs or suggestions on where to go for that?
Yes, the hospital does have services that are specific to trauma care. And so similar to my previous answer, I think we want to get these kids into treatment as soon as possible. The earlier the intervention, the more successful. But we know that trauma treatment works. There is a lot of evidence behind it. So for parents out there that may be hesitating, debating, it works. It really helps. And again, it doesn't have to be for their whole life. It can be brief. It can be a few months where we give the child and the family the tools that they need to help the child with that trauma.
This is fitting because our topic last week here at CMC was the state of small business. Small businesses might struggle to identify mental health issues and provide the right kind of resources. What recommendation would you have for small businesses in particular?
Geez, I don't know if I'm the right person to answer this. We honestly could continue to point us back to Nationwide. The resources that you have available online and through your Bloom program or otherwise is something that we really champion on a recurring basis, and really connect our associates to those resources. I would say from our experience, we also have found that Headspace is a place where they have a variety of access points. Sometimes, you know, some components that are free is another place we've found a really easy way to connect associates with resources. And then one of our other partners, I'll just mention, the Jed Foundation is largely focused on young people, but they have a very robust set of strong resources related to mental health that I, you know, would certainly advocate for.
Yeah, I'm guessing the question for the small business is tied to, it can be hard for small businesses to fund all the supports that we've been talking about. So I would say connect with your community. There's a lot of community organizations that are providing services that can help. Of course, the hospital is one of those resources for children, but there are many organizations, and I would just recommend knowing what is provided already so that when an employee is in need, you can direct them to those services.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Thomas. Thank you so much for your insights this afternoon. My work operates at the intersection of K-12 education and mental health. And my question is, how can caregivers leverage relationships with teachers, educational professionals, trusted adults who work in after-school programs to help support students' behavioral health?
Yeah, a very important question, because that's best outcomes, right? When we work together, when we have a therapist working with a teacher, working with a parent, that's how we can really help a child. And so I think one of the things we encourage at the Kids Mental Health Foundation is having those conversations, being transparent. If a parent is worried, how do I have the conversation with a teacher? Being able to understand even the school and the staff that work there. So who is it that I go talk to? How do I even start that conversation? But I think it's the conversations, it's being open with each other. I think a lot of times what I hear as a clinician is the parents are afraid to go to the school because they don't want to be seen as angry or like I'm fighting. And the teachers are sometimes nervous because I don't know what the parent is going to say when I tell them that I have a concern. And so it's all about just, you're there for the child, right? And you're trying to work together. You're trying to help the child. And so it's having those conversations and figuring out the best support.
I think as well, just to add something, I think the better communication among all groups. I know my husband has told me this. Every week they go player by player, and it's either a positive or a negative sign, and they track every student athlete to see what kind of week that they're having so they can identify problems before they become major problems. So whether it's the therapist, the position coach, the trainer, whoever it is, everyone has to report on every single student athlete so that when there's too many negative signs that they can jump in and figure out what's going on with this kid before it actually becomes a major issue. So just communication amongst the whole team, meaning parents, coaches, across the board.
Nina, thank you. This is really dovetails nicely with what you've just been talking about. This person says, as a football fan, I'm concerned about how much negative feedback is directed at college athletes. How can I help?
Yeah, with social media, you know, people often say, you know, older coaches that have actually coached at Ohio State say, I don't know how you guys do it because when I coached, there was no social media. The community can get to these students, student athletes, and coaches and their kids in ways that you're not quite prepared for in the moment. But I think as a community, we can talk about it. And I know that I have, you know, done some speaking engagements and kind of brought to light what happened to my family a year ago when we lost that game. I get, you know, it's in a very important game, but to come after my children or me is just, it just takes the integrity of the game away. And what has happened to a lot of our players and their families throughout the years. Like I said earlier, I think humanizing these student athletes and these coaches help because they're humans, they make mistakes. And trust me, they're doing the best that they can for this program. They bleed scarlet and gray. So I think as a community, we can just overall be a lot more positive, whether it's a football, you know, player or coach. I think in general, in life, just to be approach things a little bit more positively goes a long way.
Thank you. A question for Dr. Howitt. What does the data show about campaigns like On Our Sleeves and they're moving the needle on reducing the stigma associated with mental health issues and seeking help?
I'm glad that you brought up On Our Sleeves because I didn't share that earlier. So some of you all may know the Kids Mental Health Foundation as On Our Sleeves. We changed our name last year, so same program. And so we have a lot of great data from Dr. Whitney Ragland Bignall and team that we collect from specifically our teachers and our community partners. And what we're hearing is that when they use our resources in the classroom, students are more comfortable talking about emotions. Students are more comfortable talking about mental health, and it's changing their behavior. We see reports of more kindness towards their peer, more of that emotion regulation, being able to cope with the emotion. So it's taking it beyond the stigma breaking. Not only are we building comfort for the teachers that I feel comfortable talking about this in the classroom, but we're building comfort in the students. And then we see that that leads to that behavior change. They're more, the more of the prosocial behaviors, more of the emotion regulation behavior, which we know leads to better behavior in the classroom, which is what teachers really find helpful.
Thank you. We have a few minutes for a final question, but this one is kind of a two-parter. What is a message that you would want policymakers to hear on increasing access to mental health resources? And what's an action that community members can take to support families? So two-part question, something, a message that you think policymakers should hear, and something that citizens, community members can do to make a difference and support families.
I'll answer the policy one. Just a reminder that prevention work is really important. We often focus on treating. We have to go upstream. We have to prevent. We're not going to change the children's mental health crisis if we just focus on the treatment part.
I was going to say, kind of on the back of that, investing in mental health services and resources now is just as important as what we do for a physical health crisis or otherwise. And so whether that is an investment of time or money, it's more important now than ever to really support our future generations.
And I think just supporting the families by giving them the tools they need at home, you know, whether it's a tip sheet, whether it's just information to help them start conversations with their children, any type of resources that families can have to lean on when things get rough, I think is really important.
Awesome. Thank you all so much, and thank you for your questions.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week, we examined why children's mental health is also a workforce issue and how family-first policies are boosting retention, productivity, and community well-being in Central Ohio. We're grateful to this week's panelists, Anna Ankenbauer, Senior Director of Learning and Development with Abercrombie & Fitch, Community Mental Health Advocate Nina Day, and Dr. Arianna Howitt, Executive Director of the Kids Mental Health Foundation. Our host was Sierra Johnson, anchor and reporter with NBC4. This forum was sponsored by Cardinal Health. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. Our live stream partner was the Columbus Dispatch. This forum was also supported by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and by the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. If you're ready to keep exploring this week's forum topic, our friends at the Columbus Metropolitan Library recommend reading Finding Time, The Economics of Work-Life Conflict by Heather Boucher. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I'm Doug Buchanan with CMC. Thanks for listening.